listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio, focusing on solutions and thinking different.
Okay, folks, it's good evening to everybody and welcome to Circle of White Light. It's the 9th of May 2021 and my guest on the show tonight is Raymond Whitehead, and he's was involved with Direct Democracy at one point, and we're going to be talking about that later on. But before we get into the bits and pieces, let's find out what the communication channels are.
The communication channels are email, contact us at circleofwhitelight.com, by phone 046-927-1212, or sign up to our newsletter via our website at circleofwhitelight.com.
Okay, you know what the website is there, circleofwhitelight.com. Obviously, we're on Patreon as well, patreon.com/COWLR, and also on PayPal. Thank you for your donations and support to Circle of White Light. It really is much appreciated, as usual. By the way, T-shirts are still available, all sizes. If you want a T-shirt, send us an email to contactus@circleofwhitelight.com, and we can sort out the bits and pieces. It's €10 plus postage and packing, and you look really trendy, really groovy, and you'll stand out from the crowd. So if you're interested, send us an email there. Okay, just a few things that I'm going to be talking about before we get Ray on. The first thing on the list is an article on the bma.org.uk website. And it says on it, doctors urge to engage with honesty proposals. Thanks to Carmen Neal for the story. It was sent in to me during the week. The BMA in Northern Ireland is encouraging doctors to make their views known on proposals to enshrine an individual duty of candour with criminal sanctions into law. The Northern Ireland Health Department is consulting on proposals to ensure healthcare organisations and individuals working for them have a legal duty to be honest when things go wrong. A legal duty of candour was one of the key recommendations of the report of the IHRD, the public inquiry into, I'm not even going to read it out, related deaths. The inquiry, which found that the deaths of four children in hospital were avoidable, makes a number of recommendations aimed at improving care and safety and how health services handle mistakes. Specifically on candour, the report recommends that a statutory duty of candour should be implemented at an organisation and individual level, and that there should be criminal sanctions attached to both to ensure openness and honesty. Well, I totally agree. You have to be honest with your patients. We know there has been cover-ups and mistakes being made, and the more honesty that's out there with the medical profession, the better. Okay, next article is on Extra.ie, and on Extra.ie it reports that a number of Gardaí arrested as 100 questioned in corruption investigation. 100 Gardaí, that's incredible. Four serving Gardaí and a retired senior officer are facing charges in connection with a long-running Garda investigation into alleged corruption. The five individuals appeared by appointment separately at a Garda station yesterday to be arrested and charged. The probe, which has developed various strands, began 2 years ago into allegations concerning a number of individuals, individual Gardaí and civilians. Up to 100 are being questioned as part of the Gardaí investigation. Last November, 8 Gardaí were suspended as part of the same investigation. This element of the investigation has focused on alleged corruption in public office and on claims that individual Gardaí squared away potential fixed charge penalty notice prosecutions relating to a number of individuals. These charges yesterday include a retired Garda superintendent who was understood to be facing in the region of 30 charges, while the four serving Gardaí are understood to be facing approximately a dozen charges between them. You know, after reading that, folks, and if that's going on, which obviously, you know, it looks like it is, and these court cases taking place, how can you trust the Gardaí? How can you turn around and honestly, hand on heart, turn around and say, I trust the Gardaí? Now, I know you can't tar everybody with the same brush. I know there's good guards out there, and I know there's frustrated guards knowing that the system is the way it is. But how do you know which ones are the good ones, and how do you know which ones they aren't the good ones? I mean, they've committed perjury on numerous occasions in court, as we know, and falsifying evidence and everything else, and setting people up and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just, you can't trust the Gardaí. I mean, they're not fit for purpose. I think they should be disbanded and a new group set up, where the recruitment process and the training process is completely changed, because the way it's working now, it's just not working. The old way doesn't work. We need a new way, and I think that has to be done. And it's something that we'll talk to Ray on when we get Ray in a few minutes. Okay, another article that I have, it was on thelocal.dk, the website thelocal.dk, and it says Denmark pulls Johnson & Johnson jab from vaccination program. The Danish Health Authority has decided to withdraw the Johnson & Johnson jab from its vaccination program, pushing back the end of vaccination by as much as a month. In a press release, the authority said had concluded that the benefits of using the COVID-19 vaccine from Johnson & Johnson do not outweigh the risk of causing the possible adverse effect, VITT, vaccine-induced thrombotic, I'm not even going to pronounce that, in those who receive it. It said that as the COVID-19 epidemic in Denmark was currently under control and the vaccination rollout progressing satisfactorily with other available vaccines, it had decided to drop Johnson & Johnson from the national vaccination campaign. So that's, there's a little bit more here. The authority's Deputy Director General, Helene Prosset, said in the statement that it had been a difficult decision, particularly after the decision on April 14th to withdraw the AstraZeneca vaccine. Taking the present situation in Denmark into account, what we are currently losing in our effort to prevent severe illness from COVID-19 cannot outweigh the risk of causing possible side effects in the form of severe blood clots in those we vaccinate. So they've pulled the AstraZeneca, they're pulling the Johnson & Johnson. Is there a question mark over the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine as well? I mean, have people been affected by that? They probably have, more than likely. And I don't know what's going to happen with the rest of the vaccines. As more and more information comes out of the damages that's caused, because they're hiding a lot of information as well. Now, I told you earlier, I just mentioned earlier on, about the honesty in the medical profession. Well, what they really need to do is telling us exactly the truth about the vaccines and what's going on, rather than cover up the statistics of the damage that they've caused people. And when people, if somebody does die or is affected by the vaccine, that should be put out there as statistics, not hiding it, because we know there's an agenda behind it. We all know that. And this is their plan. By the way, also, I don't know whether you've seen there's a kind of news talk, kind of RTE programme, I think, and they were mentioning, you know, okay, they're opening up a little bit from tomorrow, that you can go into different counties. That's very nice of them. But they also hinted at September being another curfew lockdown. So be ready for that. You know, this is the game. This is the psychology which they're going to use. So let's see what happens in September. Okay, my week, before I bring Ray in, I paid a visit to my dentist this week, as I had a few sessions booked. I have to get some work done. After having a bad experience with a dentist, you know, about 10 years ago, I was reluctant to go, but I knew I had to go because I need to get some work done. I knew I needed work done when I saw her walking in with a full face mask and a Kangol hammer. You know, I need a few sessions to go to the dentist to get a bit of work done. I'm not saying it was a pleasant experience having someone in your mouth doing all the work. It went well, and the hygienist was had a very good bedside manner. But, you know, I mean, you know, dentists, you know, the whole drilling and just everything, you know, I'm not a fan of that. But look, and it had to be done. It's one of them things, I suppose, we all have to kind of suck it up. I always thought, you know, I was thinking, what did they do before Novocaine, before they had they numbed your gums and numbed your nerves before they did work. I mean, imagine having your teeth dealt with and having been drilled or being pulled out and all without having any anaesthetic. Oh my God, I can't bear to think about it. Okay, and the other thing before we bring Ray in is I've started work on the bartering website. It's early days, but it is starting to come together. So the whole idea of the website, it will be private, so you'll have to register for membership, which is going to be free. You'll be able to look up people in your local county for produce and services, etc., who you can barter with. We'll have a feedback system so people can see who are good at what they offer. So it's early days. I'm going to be doing a demonstration to the PIF team as well and show them. And they've been involved as well. The PIF team have been commenting, giving suggestions and ideas and stuff like that. So on Wednesday night, we normally have our PIF meeting. So I'll be doing the demo of a website and showing them. I'm obviously making certain changes and tweaks and stuff. And what I need from the listeners is if you know anybody in the local area that's going to be selling the products like produce and, you know, carrots, vegetables, fruit and all that kind of stuff, you know, and they want to barter, or people want to barter with other people. Maybe they want to barter their time. I mean, they can pay money as well. It doesn't necessarily, you know, have to be bartering without money. They can pay money. People might just want to know, where can I go and get organic veg, which is not sprayed with chemicals or whatever, and they'll pay the person the money to do it for them, or they might just barter. Somebody might have like two chickens and you want a, I don't know, a bag full of potatoes or something, whatever the bartering deal is. This is the plan. Anyway, so what I need from the listeners, if you know anybody in the counties you're in, then obviously have a word with them, and if they want to be put on the system when it's up and running, then obviously email me. I'll get them to email me or contact us at circlewhitelight.com, and they can be put on the system for their county, and then people can find, they can find them and go along and contact them and email them, and, you know, if they want to get the bits and pieces. That's the whole idea, because if we do have an actual shutdown of the system, or the shops shut down, or does the actual food chain is affected in some way, then we need to have a backup system. We need to find an alternative system where it'll tell us who is selling what, when and where. So this system, this website, is going to be basic. It's not going to be really advanced, but it'll do the job and give you the information that I want and what that you want. And you could call it part of the restoration, global restoration plan, which I've mentioned before, and Kim's been on and we've talked about it. And, you know, it's the what if scenario. What if X, Y and Z go down? What do we do? So this is what this is. This is the backup system, that if that X, Y and Z go down or there's a problem, then obviously you can have a backup system to find alternatives. And this is the idea. As I said, it's early days, but it's coming on. I'll have a meeting with the PIF team on Wednesday and we'll make a few more changes. Hopefully it'll be live in a few weeks' time. But we need to get people on the database. We need to get them in there. So yeah, let me know. That's the bits and pieces for during the week. Okay, now my guest. Let's pop over to his bio. Ray's been obviously on Open Your Mind Radio before. I think this is the fourth time Ray's been on Circle of White Light Radio. So Ray left school at 15 and went back at 17 to do his GCSEs. He became an 400-800 metre athlete and was Leinster champion over the mile. He was going on a scholarship to a US university but went instead to a Swiss university to become a teacher of the science of creative intelligence, transcendental meditation and yoga. He set up a centre to teach these in Limerick for 3 years, then left to go into business. Ray imported the first ionisers and eventually opened up an upmarket vegetarian restaurant and live band venue in Temple Bar, eventually starting the campaign to save Temple Bar from being bulldozed and being completely demolished. The rest is history. After about 10 years, he left that and got into antiques buying and selling. His specialty was restoring Victorian marble mantel clocks, as his first job at 15 was a watchmaker. He also got back to competitive athletics as a masters athlete and was national champion for 8 years. He also held the Irish record for 400 metres indoors. After the collapse of the economy in 2008, he looked back on his experience in Switzerland, which has direct democracy. He realized that we need this system only to discover what we had it under in the first constitution, and also discover that it was taken away from the people by the first government that got into power, mainly a Fine Gael government. So he went about setting up DDI, Direct Democracy Ireland Party, which is after a number of attempts was eventually hijacked by Pat Green and Associates, who got rid of Ben Gilroy, Jan van de Ven, and eventually himself, the founder and supposed lifelong president. He is now in his 70s and married to his dog. Now, when we say married to his dog, obviously we don't mean married to, you know, one of these weird married to your dog things. Good evening, Ray. How are you doing?
How you doing? That was a joke.
It feels
like I'm married to
him. Yeah, I know. Yeah, but you see these weird TV shows where they do actually marry their pet, you know. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. We sorted out the techie problems anyway. It's just one of them things. These things happen, and it's technology. What can you say? But look, you know, there's an awful lot of things we're going to have to talk about, and a lot of things that are in your bio there that we're going to have to talk about. I suppose the first thing we need to talk about is COVID and what's going on and the way you're seeing it. And then we'll get into the party politics and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, because it's dominating everywhere, because it's affecting everybody. So I suppose we have to start off with that. Tell us your stance on, you know, what you're seeing, what you think is going on over the last year, how it's been affecting you, and, you know, your take on how the government are dealing with it.
Well, I really don't quite understand why the government are doing what they're doing in the face of evidence. Ben Gilroy was in outside the Kevin Street Garda station the other day handing in a formal complaint about the numbers of people who have died. And, you know, if you look up RIP.ie, which would be considered what most people would put deaths on when one of their family members dies, they haven't registered any more deaths than any other year in the last year. So this raises a question why these people are doing this. And the lockdown, it would seem, is killing more people than it is actually saving. So, you know, why would you lock down an entire country or even the world for something that is no worse than a flu, which kills people every year, kills almost 500 people a year here, and thousands upon thousands more get bad doses of it, but we never closed down the country. We never went around wearing face masks. I'm in my 70s, and most of my friends, the few I have left, don't know anybody who has died, and neither do I. And they don't know anybody who seems to have got it, and neither do I, except for possibly myself. And it was just due to a small incident I had, which made me think maybe I had it. And it was something to do with my taste buds. And it only lasted for about 3 hours, and it was gone. And it had to do with sweet things and coffee. And a few hours later, went back and tasted another cup of coffee, and I was fine, whereas it tasted like poison before, and I'd never had that experience in my entire life. So my body, just whatever it was, threw it off within a matter of a couple of hours. And so if you're healthy, you're not going to die or be seriously ill. And, you know, when you think of all the figures that people have said, now I listened to some shocking statistics there over the last year, and we were being told that 10 people have died, you know, of corona, and then there were 200 cases, and then the cases, the death seemed to go down to almost nothing, and we started getting figures for cases. Oh, there's 500 cases. Now, you can do the same thing with flu. Oh, there's 1,000 cases of flu this week, and be careful. You know, and then I had the shocking thing where they came on and said 94 people in the last 48 hours have died with COVID. And I got a bit of a shock, and I thought, Jesus. And then I suddenly realized what had been said. 94 people in the last 48 hours have died with COVID, not of COVID, with COVID. So the actual headline should have been, nobody in the last 48 hours has died of COVID. That should have been the headline, but instead it was they died with it. They probably died of a heart attack, a stroke, cancer, you know, whatever, and had tested positive for COVID. And yet we know now that the tests for COVID are flawed, because the man who invented the test said that any amplifications over 25 are useless. And we've been multiplying or magnifying the test by 35 to 45 times, which gives an absolutely crazy result. There was some president in an African country there sent in samples of a fruit fly, a chimpanzee and something else, and they all came back, a piece of fruit, I think it was, they all came back positive. Mm. So we're obviously being lied to. And I just don't know why they would manipulate things in that fashion. And I'm as much of a loss as everybody else. And I just can't believe the people who are just buying into this mindlessly. And like I said, that headline, 94 people have died in the last 48 hours with COVID, it freaked me out for a couple of seconds until I realized what was said. And people don't analyze things in that way. They just go, oh, shit, 94 people died in the last 48 hours. No, nobody died.
Well, let's look at that. And I have talked about the psychology of this and what's going on. I had Rachel Alexander on, who's a psychologist, and we talked about this. And basically what's happening, and people have said to me, why aren't people seeing it? Why aren't they seeing what's going on? But we know that the media is pushing fear. OK, so by them pushing fear, then that shuts down a person's prefrontal cortex. The prefrontal cortex is the logical, critical mind, the questioning mind. And when you're in fear, fight and flight takes over. So they can't think because they're in fear. And that's why a lot of people are not getting it, because they're in fear, because they're listening to the rubbish that's on the media. And just swallowing everything the media is saying without actually saying, hang on a minute, I want to question this. And that's the psychology of it. And why this is going on with people and the way, and why they're not waking up to it. Now, here's the other thing, Ray, which, you know, governments lie, politicians lie. You know, I call them political prostitutes, because that's what they are. They'll sell themselves and sell their souls for whatever, you know, step of the ladder do you want to get up. The majority of them anyway. And they lie. And that's time and time again in the history of Ireland, they've lied. And why do people feel that they have to trust them now? I mean, that's one of the questions I say to people. One of the first questions I say is, do you trust your government? And most people, if not all the people I've asked, said no. And I said, why do you think they're telling you the truth now? Yeah. And it's that simple. Again, we need transparency. We need honesty. That system that we have is an old system. It's an antiquated system. It doesn't work for the majority, if not all the population now. We need politicians in there. We need people in there that are going to be honest and upfront with the people. But the problem is that you have the uncomfortable truths or the comfortable lies. And this is the problem with people. Some people prefer to be lied to, because if you tell them the truth, it pushes them outside the comfort zone, which they don't like. It's uncomfortable. So they prefer the lie. And, I mean, what do you do about that to the population who prefer to hear the lie to make them all comfortable rather than the actual truth?
Yeah, look, who do you trust? I mean, people voted, for instance, for the Minister for Health now. What's his name?
Simon Harris, isn't
no,
it?
No. The bald chap with the glasses.
Holohan. Tony Holohan or something?
No. God, I should know his name. Anyway.
That's how interested I am in politics. I don't even know who they are.
And I know his name. I just can't think of it put on the spot. But he was voted in Wicklow as an independent. And as soon as he got in, he swapped over and to Fianna Fáil. And he's now the Minister for Health, which he would never have been with a big fat pension if he'd stayed as an independent. But that was a treacherous act for the people who voted for him, who did not want to vote for Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or any of the other parties, right? And that was virtually a treasonous act on his part to the people who voted for him.
Yeah, his name is Stephen Donnelly. Thanks, Bluebell.
Stephen Donnelly. And, you know, nobody voted for him. Now, if we had direct democracy, the people who voted him in could call for a referendum, which we can't do, and take him out because he lied. He went forward as an independent and changed to a political party that nobody voted for. So we can't do that. So we're stuck with him. And, you know, we see what he's done now. When I set up Direct Democracy Ireland, it inspired a number of people to do similar things. Dermot Ferreter, who's a professor in UCD of history, I think it is, he set up Reinstate 48, which was Article 48 of our first constitution, which gave the people the power of direct democracy, where they could call an election. And he wanted that reinstated, and inspired by the Direct Democracy Ireland. Another chap, Mark, set up a thing called 1YI. Now, that was the one-year initiative. And he got 145 people who are going forward for election to sign up to reinstate Article 48 of our first constitution to give the power back to the people of direct democracy and our citizen-initiated referendum, if you want to call it that. And almost 50, actually, of those people who signed up got elected. Now, between the 50 of them, they could have got together, called for a referendum in the Dáil to reinstate Article 48 of our first constitution. Not one of them has done it. And the people who signed up to it are people like Paul Murphy, Boyd Barrett, Eamon Ryan. You haven't heard one word about the one-year initiative that they all signed up to. Almost 50 of them signed that petition that he put out before the election. Not one of them have, you know. So who do you trust?
Mm.
They all seem to be liars.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's depressing. It's sad. And it's depressing when you actually... I knew nothing about politics before I set up this party. And I only did it for the purpose of putting power back into the hands of the people, which the Swiss people had. And I discovered that when I went to study there. And I was shocked by the power that the ordinary person felt they had in their own community. And it starts from the ground up. It's not something that is from the top down. The people in their local village, in their town, in their county, all the way up, feel that they are, their politicians from the ground up, from their local village, are answerable to them. They have this power to recall them if they lie, if they don't carry out what they promised to do, or if they don't like what they've done, whatever. And they have the power to also call referendum on a local, county, or national level. They have that sense of power. It's bred into them from school. Children are brought up to understand this power that they have. So I was shocked by this when I went, because I'd come from Ireland where everybody goes, oh, what can we do? It's the government. There's nothing. Apathy. Total apathy. And these people, you had a sense of their sense of power. It was incredible. And I forgot about it when I left because I had no interest in politics. I just wanted to get on with teaching people to meditate and all of that and then get into business, and forgot all about it. But it came back to me when the collapse came in 2008, the financial collapse, and I suffered as a result of that, and I was in shock. And I, in my mind, remembered again, it came back to me, the power that people had and the helplessness that I felt in my own country, and everybody else did. Mm. Now, when I started the campaign to save Temple Bar, I had a nightclub and a restaurant there, and I went around because there was a CIE were buying up all the properties and they were going to demolish the whole area, and there were going to be underground bus stations, there was going to be office blocks and huge entertainment complexes and everything, concrete jungle there once they demolished it. I grew up in the city centre and this was my area, if you like. And I resented this, and especially being such a historic area as well, with a lot of history behind it. And it was a living piece of history. And there were more, there was a greater mix of businesses in Temple Bar than anywhere else in the country, from solicitors' offices, you know, trophy shops, art galleries, restaurants, well, there was no nightclubs there at the time. I was the first one. But there was such a mix of businesses there that it was nowhere else in the country. And it was a very thriving, quietly thriving area. It was a bit run down, yeah. But I went around my local restaurateurs and people like that, trying to get them to come together to, you know, do something about the fact that this place is going to be destroyed and they're all going to be evicted. And CIE were only giving short-term lease, so you'd no rights. And they were renewing them until they came around to demolishing the area, bulldozing it. So every one of them that I spoke to went, oh, what can we do? It's the government. The usual thing, the apathy that's in Ireland, that once you've elected somebody, you have no, that's your only thing you've got. Outside of that, you have no power. Mm. And they all were so apathetic, and I thought, what the hell? So I decided to take matters into my own hands, remembering Switzerland. I got leaflets printed, hundreds of leaflets. I got paid my staff, and we walked the streets distributing these leaflets for days, going up and down stairs in every single building in Temple Bar, a meeting of the businesses and residents in, I think it was Oliver St. John Gogarty's pub at the time. And 300 people turned up. I got the press in, I got Antashka in, and I chaired the first two meetings. And the next day, there were big articles in the paper, major articles going, the new Temple Bar Business and Residents Association, and everything reported what was said and what I said and all that. And suddenly they realized they were a force, and they all got excited and they came together. And the main businesses there became Temple Bar Properties in the end when it was saved.
Excellent.
So this is the power that people have. But, you know, again, that was forgotten. And then 2008 came along. We're talking 10 or 20 years, 20 years later nearly, and or whatever it was. And when everything collapsed, I was in shock and I thought, we need direct democracy. And it was only when I started pushing the idea, you know, just off the top of my head, contacted a few people, that I contacted Jan van de Ven, who's a Dutchman who has an American accent. He spent a lot of time in America. His father traveled the world. And he said, by the way, because I knew nothing about politics now, I was just so outraged at what had happened and that the banks had been bailed out and the people hadn't. And the people's pensions had been stolen by the government, all of this. And I was so in shock, I thought, I have to do something. We need direct democracy. We have no voice as a people. And Jan said to me, by the way, did you realize that we had this under our first constitution? He knew more about this than me. And I said, what? He said, yeah. You get 100,000 signatures or 50, whatever it was, 70,000, I think it was, and people could call a referendum. The founding fathers of the Irish Free State gave the people this power to guard against abuses of power by the people that they elect. And it was taken away from the people.
Okay.
It was taken away.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get into who does. There seems to be some controversy as to how it was taken away. Can you clarify that for us?
I can, yeah, no problem. It was taken away in a very devious way, in that they couldn't take it out of the Constitution because it's the people's constitution, and they would have had to have a referendum on it. Now, under that constitution, they had to put any changes they were going to make to the constitution to the people within 2 years. So having taken it out, they had to put it for a referendum within 2 years. Normally they would put it within a month or two or whatever, but they had a 2 year period. Now, they could not do that themselves, but there was a clause in there that allowed them to make amendments. And what do? They extended the period of 2 years. And they said to the people, within days of them announcing this, there were 100,000 people out on the streets protesting against it. In a day before mobile phones, most people didn't have telephones, mm-hmm. internet. In a day before all of that, there was 100,000 people out on the streets protesting. And what did the government say? We're not denying you your right to have a referendum on this. We're just extending the period that we do this from 2 years to 8 years. Okay?
Mm.
What happened at the end of that 8 years? They extended it by another 8 years. And what happened then? We got our freedom from the Brits. De Valera, who was against it because he was in the opposition back in 1922, against this being taken out of the Constitution, suddenly realized the power it gave him because he was now in power.
Mm.
And he left it in. And he put in a kind of a one-liner, if you like, when he put together the second Constitution, 1937 Constitution, he put in a one-liner that any changes that had been made to the previous Constitution remained. Simple as that. We never got to vote on that being taken out of our Constitution. But people signed off on the second Constitution, and in doing that, sealed their own fate of being denied any voice other than to elect people.
Well, there is a question mark over the whole idea of the Constitution, because the government seemed to be ignoring the Constitution anyway. I mean, I hear people talking about, oh, but we have a Constitution. I mean, the government seemed to just be ignoring that anyway in a lot of cases. And, you know, why does that Constitution, how is that relevant to me in 2021 when this was done in, you know, 1919 and 1937? How is that relevant to me? I wasn't there. I didn't agree to that, to it. So how is that? How does that, why does that need to be something that affects me? Now, I know it's a positive. I mean, I know there's Article 41.1, which is all about the family and everything else. But, I mean, they really don't care. The Irish government are just a law unto their own. And you mentioned about the Constitution. I mean, the Gardaí don't have a clue, you know, about, they just talk about all the legislation. And when you mention the Constitution, most of them, if not all, well, I won't say all of them, but most of them will just go, yeah, that's nothing got to do with me. Look, at the end of the day, if you don't do what you're told, we pull you out of the car and then, you know, we're going to fine you. I mean, it's just like the Wild West at the moment. But from the amount of stories and video clips I'm seeing, it's just, you know, Ireland is like a cesspit at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Micheál Martin stood up. And again, we're being pushed towards this total slavery. I mean, total slavery. Micheál Martin stood up in the Dáil there not so long ago. And Brian Cowan said this as well, by the way. He stood up and said, somebody raised the point of our sovereignty. And Micheál Martin stood up and said, sovereignty is an outdated, something like Dickensian idea, we are now part of the EU. So we are no longer a sovereign people. Mm. And we were never asked about this, whether we wanted to give up our sovereignty or not, except that we did when we signed the Lisbon Treaty. Mm. And nobody read it because the documents are 6 feet high.
Mm.
Nobody read it. Not even our own politicians have read 6 foot of documents. Nobody has read it. So hidden in those documents, just like our constitution, which wasn't even that enormous, very few people actually read it. Oh, we're free now. Let's celebrate. Happy days. Great. Wonderful. That's it. They don't question. And what can I say? I mean, we're just being walked into slavery, basically. That's it.
Yeah. And you would think people would actually learn from history with World War II and everything else and the Nuremberg trials. Now, apparently, the rumor is going around, and I don't know how true it is, Ray, that there is a second set of Nuremberg trials actually being set up by a large number of German lawyers and doctors who are now putting the second level of Nuremberg trials because they see what's going on globally with this COVID. And what the countries and what certain people are trying to do, like Klaus Schwab and all his gang over in Europe, and the implementations they're trying to bring in with the green passport and the control with that. I mean, have we not learned from history that, you know, where are your papers? You know, I mean, surely people have see that.
No, look, we haven't learned from history because history is not being taught now. You go into school and they want to teach children from the age of 4 or 5 how to masturbate, all about sex, that you can that a child can change their own sex without parents' permission, and the parents can be held responsible if they try to prevent this from happening. Their parents can be jailed.
Yeah.
The child has more power than the parents. So they're being indoctrinated. There isn't an education system now. There's an indoctrination system. It's as simple as that. And they are channeling what your children think, how they think, what they think about. That is being channeled. They're not being taught history. They're not. And in fact, they wanted to ban history being taught there. Somebody brought it up there recently that it was a waste of time. So, you know, this is programming. This is pure and utter hypnosis of a type, of a sort.
And if you look if you look at the Lisbon Treaty, wasn't that the one where we all voted no and you went, no, you got that wrong. We're going to ask you again.
Yeah.
And then, sure, the lady, the MEP, which I did interview, Cynthia, I forget her name now. I'll come back. Maybe somebody in the chat room can give me her name. But she was an MEP, and I interviewed her there a couple of years ago, and she was saying that she was in Europe at the time that was taking place, and she knew that they wanted the yes vote, and they would just ignore anything the Irish people said, and they would just push the yes vote, and that's it. And this is what these people do. They're megalomaniacs for control and power. And
They did that across Europe as well. We weren't the only ones. They did it in France. They promised a referendum in other countries, and then they were denied. So these people just do whatever they want. They're in control. And of course, none of us voted for these people in the EU, and they're running the show. And our sovereignty is gone. We're subject to their rules and regulations. And it's as simple as that. We're just being marched into a federal state. You know, that's it. And we're not being educated. We're not being given all of the facts about anything. They're making it up as they go along. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. And it is shocking when you actually stop and think. But most people don't think. They just do what they're told. Simple as that. Mm-hmm. And they don't believe the government would do anything to harm them.
Yeah.
The rights are being taken away. And you know,
but is this part of the? I mean, Jerry Ryan said about NIMBYs, not in my backyard, and the I'm okay Jacks, that they don't realise that what's happening and coming down the line is going to affect them. They might think, oh well, it's not going to affect me, so I'm okay, Jack. But it's going to. I mean, this is something I said a few years ago on the radio. I said we need something globally that will affect everybody in a way that will get them to wake up. Now, I think COVID is the thing I was asking for, or saying, suggesting that something's going to happen. We didn't know what it was, but we think COVID is the solution. But the problem is that maybe things have to get harder before people begin to wake up. Now, there's a lot of people beginning to wake up now. And even like in the last few weeks and stuff like that, people are beginning to get it. And maybe that's what's needed. Maybe that's the catalyst, you know, that the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say, to get people to question, especially when you're struggling and you're in trouble and you have to pay your mortgage and you lost your job, I mean, and health problems as well. These are all brilliant eye-openers for people when something like that comes knocking to the door. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful or a bad way, but a lot of people who have woken up to what's going on had something, some tragedy in their life, where whether it's a medical or a job loss or they lost a house or something, and that was the catalyst for them to actually wake up. So maybe COVID is the solution to get people to wake up, because we never ever want to ever have this happen again in it globally at all. I think this is the last shot these elites have in getting what they want. And I think, in all honesty, Ray, they are struggling. They're trying to push it forward as fast as they can, because they know that people are waking up and they need to be push. But I think it's failing. I do think it's failing, because so many people now, I mean, it was mentioned there by, I think, Jim on the chat room, Holly Willoughby, who's on GMTV with Phil, what's his name? She was there on video saying, "Oh, look at me getting the vaccine jab." But the majority, if not all the comments, I'd say the majority of the comments was on there, were slagging her off big time. And which is, you know, so to me, when you see things like that going on, you think, okay, people are getting it now, you know?
I just don't know. And I think it may be too late, because the number of people that I see getting the vaccine, and I'm shocked. And even one or two friends of mine who agree this is all a scam, and they got the vaccine. They just want to travel. They just don't want the bother. Now, part of the problem is people, a large part of the population, are very easily hypnotized. And you're dealing with a state. You're dealing with a government and a state and the permanent government, as we know, that hire experts to tell them how to hypnotize people. Basically, it's a way of channeling people again and hypnotizing them. I went to a hypnotic show about 20 years ago, and it stuck in my mind. And it came back to me again because of this thing recently. But I was shocked by the number of people who were so easily hypnotized. This guy got up on stage and people believed he was a hypnotist, and that was it. And he was supposed to be a well-known hypnotist, and he is. And before he started, he needed half a dozen people up on stage to make idiots of themselves, which they do. They're seeing leprechauns and tigers under their chair and all this. And it's funny, you know. And to get those people up on stage, nobody was going to go up and make a fool of themselves. But to get them up on stage, he used a fear factor, which is what the government are doing. What he did was, he got the entire audience before he started, said, "Cross your fingers, join your hands together and cross your fingers," right? So you lock your hands together. "Put your hands now over your head, locked together. And I'm going to count to three and you're not going to be able to open your hands. One, two, three." Half the population could not open, the audience could not open their hands. Almost half, I'd say. That's how easy it was.
Yeah.
That easy. A few words. That was it. They believed he was a hypnotist. I saw people struggling to open their hands. They believed they could not open their hands. Now, what he then did was he called about a dozen people up on stage. He said, "Come on up, I'll release your hands." And they were stressed. And he could see that. And that's how he got them up on stage. Then what he did was he told everybody else in the audience, "Now you can open your hands." And they all opened their hands. Then he said to the 12 there, he did a few little things with them, and he picked out the half a dozen most easily hypnotized. He only had to click his fingers and they went into a trance. And he sent the rest down back into the audience, and he had the most vulnerable people, and he made them jump around and think they were in outer space and God knows what. But that's how easy it was. Now you have a government that people believe know what they're doing, that they have their finger on the pulse. And if they tell you you're going to die, half the population believe it. It's as simple as that. That's it. And they're hiring, and they have the money and the wherewithal to hire top people who are into marketing and how to get people, you know, pulled in and sucked in, and how that they can do that and ratchet up the fear factor and all of these things. Why aren't you going to, even if only half the people believe you, 70 or 80% are going to believe you if you do it long enough. Every time you turn on the television, you're going to die. You're going to die. More people are dying. More people are dying. The hospitals are full. The hospitals, every minute of the day, you tune on and it's like repetitive. Why aren't you going to get all these people?
Well,
eventually,
propaganda never stopped after World War II. It carried on. It just got smarter. I'll just say I am at a loss tonight for some reason. Names are not coming to me as they normally do. But thanks to Joan, Cathy Sinnott was the MEP in Europe who actually was dealing with talking about the Lisbon Treaty. And Philip Schofield is the chap with Holly Willoughby. Over in the UK, the UK government have a group called the SAGE Group. Oh, you probably know this, right? And the SAGE Group are people who are all kind of different spin doctors in different fields. And their job is to work out what is the best way to manipulate the population. Now, like you, I seen Paul McKenna in the Wembley Conference Centre in the early 90s. And it was 2,000 people there, and he got people up on stage and got people running around like chickens and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Which proved the point that people can and are very susceptible to suggestion if you're probably have weak willed. I don't know. Maybe it's being weak willed. I know that, you know, other people, they do say that when you wake up and you step outside the matrix, then that can't happen to you because you're actually outside, if you want to call it the matrix, outside that spell of the government. Because I put an article up there and I read it out last week. You've probably seen it on Facebook, Ray, because I know you're a Facebook friend, about the magician's trick. And the magician's trick is all about, his agenda is to obviously fool you, make it look like it's magic, and to obviously get you to tell your friends, so your friends come along and they get fooled as well. And some people will want to know how the trick is done, and other people won't want to know because obviously they want to believe that there's such a thing as magic and he can do magic. But when we find out how the trick is done, we feel a bit silly, maybe. Go, well, why didn't I notice that? I should have noticed that. That's stupid, you know. You know, you realise that you've been. It's a trick. But some people don't want to be. They think it's magic, and if they get involved in the trick with the magician, then as part of convincing people that it is magic because I was there and he did magic, and there's no way he could have done it. And I see this as a translation to the vaccines, where people are obviously trusting the government, believing all the media hype and the propaganda. And then the people that go in, get the vaccine, even if they're being told, don't get the vaccine, it's bad for you. Because they've bought into it, they now have to go and sell it to make them feel good and that it's okay. Because they don't want to feel stupid that, oh, damn, I've got the vaccine. And actually, it's not a vaccine. It's experimental gene therapy. So I'll just carry on telling people that I'm okay, I'm fine, and everything's great. And this is the problem that you have with so many people thinking different ways and different methods. And I know you came and you brought DDI, or the idea of setting up the DDI party to make a difference. And I remember, because I was around, obviously, with Open Your Mind Radio, me and Steve. And I remember Ben getting up and doing a talk on behalf of DDI. And fair play to Ben. He gave acknowledgement to Open Your Mind Radio, along with a couple of other media outlets. But what I find is a lot of people just seem to neglect alt media. They just don't seem to say anything or give it a mention. And it's frustrating because personally, I've been doing this for 11 years now, and obviously with Steve, 9 years in OIM. But a lot of people just neglect alt media. But yeah, we've been actually doing this for such a long time. And maybe... I don't know why. I mean, there's a lot of people doing the video stuff now, but when we started, it was kind of all audio, really, most of it. Now people are coming out on video, which is great to see. I mean, if you look at the Sovereign Independent newspaper way back in 2011, 2012, their front page of one of the Sovereign Independents was saying mandatory vaccines. back in 2012. You know, so they were ahead of the game. But again, people were not awakened. They just thought, oh, you're just conspiracy theorists. So let's look at the DDI thing. Obviously, there's some controversy there, which you said in your bio. I read out the bio. And you mentioned Pat. I know Pat's not here. As I said, everybody has their own side of, you know, their own opinion on things. And I'm sure Pat has his opinion on what happened. But in a kind of a nutshell, tell us what happened and to your role in DDI.
Well, I mean, I was the founder and the leader for a while, and then somebody introduced me to Ben Gilroy, and I realized very quickly that, you know, Ben was a pretty good guy, and I stood back and let him become the leader. But the people who were in control of the executive got rid of Ben, and eventually then Jan van de Ven became leader, and they got rid of him. And then I objected. I had some objections over a number of years to the fact that nothing was being done with our website, and it was coming up to an election. And I kept asking them for a number of years to upgrade it. And I even offered Pat Grimm €1,000. He was in my back garden at the time, I think, and to upgrade the website. And he turned it down, said he'd do it himself. And nothing was done. And I got into conflict with them. And they just got rid of me, basically. Just that's to keep it fairly short. I was removed from the party. And I had problems with the fact that I set up the party for only one purpose. That was to promote direct democracy, citizen-initiated referendum. That was it. And it degenerated into anti-water charges, anti-abortion, and it was full of all this kind of anti-everything, anti-banks, and it was a moan party, if you ask me, a complaints party. And it was there for one purpose, to educate people about the power that is there in direct democracy, and it wasn't being shown. I had excellent interviews on radio stations, as had Ben and Jan. None of them were put up on the site. None of them. And I had a problem with that. So, you know, it was there for just one purpose, to educate people about the power that is in the hands, potentially, of people. And it degenerated into anti, like I said, everything other than promoting direct democracy, you know. So I had a problem with that, and they got rid of me, and that was the end of it.
Okay, so I can't go into, I know Pat was on the show a few weeks ago, and obviously, you know, he touched base on direct democracy, and I'm not sure what's going on there. Probably need an update on what's happening. But from your perspective and your point of view, would you set up another party and focus on that, and then kind of stick to that agenda, and again go back to the core root of what DDI was all about, but give it another name?
Yeah, I'm certainly thinking about that. All right, yeah. And direct democracy, the people in charge of that of that party are talking about merging with somebody else. So direct democracy, they will have got rid of it, if you like. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's egotistical reasons. It's for their own aggrandizement, not for the promotion of direct democracy. So, you know, I just have a problem with that. You know, like I said, it was set up for one purpose, and they took it away from that. When I was involved, and I had to step away for a number of years because all my family members started dying one after the other, and I was looking after them all because I was single, no children, and you know, I took it on myself to be there for them every single night for 9 years without a day off. And I had to step back. And before I stepped back, we had 27 people going forward for election on one occasion. And Ben got very close to being elected in the Mideast by-election at the time. And it degenerated down to the fact that I think there was nobody went up for election in the last election. So that's how far it had degenerated.
Yeah. I mean, I remember all because obviously we were there at the time when there was the rollout of DDI. And even to the stage that I sent the check in to become a member and support you because we needed something. Nobody was doing anything. And everybody was frustrated. And all of a sudden, DDI came out and said, oh, we have these principles and they're in our original constitution. And we said, this is brilliant. This is what we need. But it was so kind of radical for some people that they just didn't get it. And I know Ben did a great job doing explaining direct democracy and how it worked. Sure. And people, even after doing that, people going, sure, no. No, you couldn't. It's again going back to Tweedledum and Tweedledee politics, the old reliables. You know, let's not bet on the newcomer because we know Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. We know the way they are. You know, I mean, we all knew he was a crook. You know, he was a lovable rogue, but we all knew we all knew that he was a crook, and that should be unacceptable. You know, and they kind of, you know what he's like. Oh, but even, you know, there's probably a few politicians like that in our government today who are the same. Obviously, I can't mention any names, but I'm sure there is. Let's just say we'll assume there is. And it's just incredible that people kind of didn't get it. You know, look at it logically as, you know, especially when you say, well, look, this was put in our original constitution. This is not a new idea. We had this in our original constitution, but it was taken out.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You know, these people, they study the election parties. When there's an election, they study the parties like the studying form of a horse. And an election comes on and they're looking at all the politicians and they're going, oh, I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for. And they're the people that should never be allowed to vote, in all honesty, because they obviously don't understand politics and how it works. They don't understand the bigger picture. And I don't know what the solution is, Ray. You know, even when you say, get out and vote for whatever party you're going to be to represent direct democracy, how can you trust the voting? Because the votes are done on they're done on the Friday, aren't they, or whatever day they do it, and then they're kept in a inverted commas Garda station over the weekend, and then they're counted on the Monday or whatever. I mean, I just read out the article about 100 guards being investigated, and they want us to believe that the vote boxes go into the Garda station are going to be safe.
There's a total lack of transparency when it comes to voting here, and you can be sure we're not much different to what happened in America, where things are manipulated. And you know, I've heard stories myself from people who are at the counting centres, and you know, they're just ignored, if you like, you know. But without getting into all of that, it's. What can I say? I thought we lived in a democracy when I started to set up in my innocence. And given what I've learned over the years, we do not live in a democracy. And everything is controlled. The judiciary, the media, the politicians themselves, the party whip system, all of this. And the people have no power. Other than we're not considered intelligent enough to have an ongoing say throughout throughout the time that these people we elect are elected. We're only intelligent enough to elect them once a year, once every 5 years, and that's it. We have no intelligence to have an opinion on anything. We're told to shut up for the next 5 years. That doesn't make sense to me. And the problem is, lack of information. Everything again is manipulated. You can see it through the media, especially it's been highlighted in this pandemic, how anyone with an opinion outside of the main agenda is not allowed on the television or is put down as a quack or a crank.
It's amazing, Ray, that the ex-expose girl, Aisling O'Loughlin, did a video I was watching today, and she said that in DCU, they actually have somebody in there who is a professor or somebody who's in charge of conspiracy theorists and dealing with that. And she said when she was in DCU, they had nothing like that. And now you're not allowed to have an opinion. You can't question the narrative. If you question the narrative, you're a conspiracy theorist. I mean, if that alone should be ringing alarm bells for people, if they say, oh, no, you can't question what we say. You just have to believe and trust everything we do and say, and you can't question. I mean, that alone should raise alarm bells. I mean, talking about.
Look, I was looking at a video there today, a brief video of a preacher in England who was up on a soapbox quoting the Bible. And two policemen came along and dragged him for preaching the Bible, if you like, and quoting the Bible. And he was arrested for hate speech because he quoted the Bible saying that marriage is between a man and a woman. He was arrested for hate. And not only that, he was assaulted, beaten and kicked by the police.
Well, look at the chap, Jordan.
So the Bible is now a criminal offence. And as you saw there, most people have probably seen it at this stage, the man who videoed the guards arresting the priest and going into the church for saying mass. And there are only half a dozen people in the place, in the building. And he was arrested. And next thing, his house is broken into and his children taken from him at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, we're at a very extreme, it's almost worse than communist China or the Stasis and, you know, whatever. We have an illusion of being in a democracy. We don't live in a democracy anymore. It's as simple as that. And the system has to change, or I don't know where this is going. And the people who are getting the vaccine, if what some of the virologists and doctors have been saying, that people are going to start dying within the next couple of years as a result, that it's going to cause a cytokine storm in their immune systems when they get the natural virus comes along. The body will go into overdrive and they will die as a result. If that's true, then a major proportion of our population are going to be dead within the next couple of years. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they're wrong. But, you know, God knows where this is going.
Well,
you know,
and I was going to say, right, think of the logic of this, right? Now, there is a kind of spin on this, right? Now, I said on the show last week and in a couple of weeks, and it's worthwhile saying it to you and get your take on this. So there's loads of people out there queuing up for the vaccine. There are virtual signalling, or they do want to be part of the herd mentality because they're not strong enough to step outside and say, I'm not going to get it. They want to be seen to be doing the right thing. Again, the virtual signalling. And also, you have people who are selfish, who want to jump the queue because, you know, I want to protect myself. They believe in all the rubbish they're being told by the media, and they think they're going to die. They're hypnotized, so they try and jump the queue to try and get the virus, right? But karma will come around. Now, what will happen is, I was told a couple of years ago by people that have said that there's going to be a die-off of the world population. Now, this is before we knew anything about COVID. And I said to the chaps, I said, well, I can't see that happening. You know, if you start just seeing people dying, then obviously, you know, you start asking questions. And then COVID happened. And then I said, okay, now I see it. Because the people who are getting the vaccine, if the people who aren't getting it are going to be probably, let's say, more open-minded and more service to others than service to self, say, for example. So the people who are going to be left behind are going to be more of a positive, open-minded nature than the people who are taking the vaccine, and they're the more closed-minded nature. And then if that carries on, and then we educate the next generation to be more open-minded, then do you see where this is kind of going? So there might be, this could be karma and the universe taking out the people that are not going to be right for moving forward with society.
The only problem is that this is a worldwide phenomenon. So if that happens and a large proportion of the population die in the next few years as a result of all this, we're going to end up back in the Stone Age, because there'll be no pilots who will all have to have had their shots. There'll be no people operating farming. They'll be greatly reduced. There'll be huge food shortages. You know, so many things are just, society's going to collapse because, you know, half the population are not going to be there to provide the services that we have become dependent on. So we're going to be almost back in the Stone Age, and it's going to be every man for himself.
Well, I'm glad you...
For those who survive.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Ray, because the whole idea of the people that I'm working with is, and I mentioned it earlier about the Global Restoration Plan, on one of the websites I'm currently working on is a bartering website, because we can see this coming down the line, or the potential of this happening. And if that happens, then there will be issues with food shortages. And, you know, I wouldn't be worried about flying. You know, you need... The five things that you need are... water, heat, obviously a place to stay, shelter, food, and obviously some kind of electricity or power, something like that. Again, the solar energy that I've been kind of talking to people about as well. They're really the five main things that you're going to need. Now, the whole idea of the Global Restoration Plan, and it's what I'm involved in with a few people, is we want to put this in place before the proverbial hits the fan. So this is what we're doing now, is putting all this in action. So when people turn around and go, oh my God, what are we going to do? We can go, here you go. This is the backup plan. This is
But you're forgetting one thing, Alan. All right? You're talking as though you're living in a, after this happens, if it does happen, that you're living in a civilized society.
Oh, look, I know
you'll
where you're
looking
going.
At something a bit like, what's that, what's his name's film?
Mad Max.
Mad Max. Yeah. You'll be looking at something like that, and it won't be the nicety of, oh, I can swap food with my neighbours and I can provide them with lawn mowers or something. No, you're going to be living in chaos.
Yeah, but look...
The whole... You've seen, you know, people have said, we're only... a hair's breadth away from total chaos when things go wrong. And we've seen it in society. We've seen it in America, even with the what they call the, not the Black Lives Matter, the other crowd, Antifa, burning down cities almost and being told that they're peaceful protesters.
Yeah. Well, look,
And people being killed.
Yeah. Look, I'm not naive enough to think
it's not a pretty picture.
I know. And it was John Irwin, who's a super soldier, was on the show, and he said, look, your enemy is not the government and the police. Your enemy is your next door neighbour, because they'll kick down your door and they'll stab you for your tin of tuna. I'm aware of that. But the whole idea is that if you have, and there's going to be Roman gangs, if it got that bad, there'll be Roman gangs. I'm aware of that. So what I'm trying to say to people is, you're going to have put together a community of people that can support each other to reduce the risk of that happening. And this is the whole idea. It's not just about me as an individual going to work with the next door neighbour. I'm actually talking about everything. I'm talking about everything from food to arming yourself to protecting yourself. And
I was just going to say, you want to have a friend who has an AK-47.
Oh, well, you know, does yeah, no guns allowed, and well, not that type anyway. But no, look, there's ways and means. It's not all about guns. There's other things that you can do. But the whole idea behind it is that if society does break down, the best thing you can do is to form a community where you can all protect each other, because on your own, you haven't a chance. But if you're in a community of people and you get together and work together, and this is what myself and people that I'm working with are looking at putting together, should that happen. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but we are putting together plans should that happen. So, you know, it's hopefully the I know they had the movie The Road, which is very kind of depressing watching the movie. But at the end of the day, we don't know how far this is going to go, or if something shifts where there's going to be a change where we don't go down that far. Because, I mean, it's just, it's kind of madness. I mean, I know they have their underground bases. We know about that. And we know they've been loading a load of 44 trucks down on underground bases for years and years and years, especially in the middle of America. I'm trying to think of what the name of the place is, but there's a base there that's very high up, and they have a lot of 44 trucks and have been doing for years. So maybe they're expecting something, I don't know. But we have a question for you, Ray, on the Ozarks, that's what it's called. If you look at the Ozarks, and they're very blatant with this, by the way. They're not hiding anything. They can actually go on YouTube and actually see it, and they show it to you. The question is from Shane. He says, Raymond, do you feel DDI was infiltrated by the state?
That's a good question. I know that in the early days, there were several attempts before I'd actually formed the party. I'd gotten most of the signatures to form a party. Some people made themselves useful and helped set up a constitution for the party. And made themselves, set up a structure, made themselves the executive of the party. And suddenly I was called to an extraordinary meeting of the executives and told that I was in breach of the now new constitution, that I'd been talking to people like Dave McWilliams or various people like that about direct democracy and trying to promote it without going through them. Now, the party hadn't been formed. But anyway, I was called to a meeting whereby I was going to be dismissed before the weekly general meeting of members. And I notified the members and they all turned up early. And we had a vote to dissolved the group and the name, which had been registered with the company's office and all that. And we dissolved the whole thing as a group and as members. And they kept saying, oh, we're the real DDI. You can't do that. And we said, well, we've just done it. And left them sitting in the room and said, you can pay the bill for the room. So then we went into the pub and notified company's office, got rid of them, and half an hour later, after a couple of pints, we reinstated the party with the new members, excluding the ones who had tried to take it over and get rid of me. So this happened, things like that happened two or three times in the process of trying to set it up. Now, the people who tried to do that at the time, I happened to be talking to a chap from the 1YI, mentioned the name of one of these people, and it turns out that himself and a few others got involved with the Yellow Vest and are doing the same thing, trying to cause division and break them up. And it turns out that these people don't work. I'm told they're members of a particular party that has €500,000 at their disposal. They go around looking like slightly downbeat characters with little haversacks on their shoulders and infiltrate groups. Now, who's paying them? Where are they getting this money? It's hard to know if they're what some people call controlled opposition. Hmm. So that's hard to say, but I wouldn't put it past the government to do that. I mean, you know, I've come across so many blocks and attempts by media and all of that, which do not make sense, whereby they just won't let you get off the ground, basically.
Yeah.
And then you have people who, for egotistical reasons, want to be part of something and, you know, dictate what's happening. So there's egos involved, there's controlled opposition, there's all of these kind of things that go on. Mm-hmm. And it's just very hard to know where the lines don't overlap or do overlap. So, I mean, I remember being on with Pat Kenny on a discussion coming up to an election with other people like Boyd Barrett and people like that on the panel, being interviewed about what our stance was on different things as we went up for election. And at one point I said, Pat said something to me, and I got rather annoyed, and something hit me, and I made a point which was very hard hitting, and I surprised myself, and I remember saying, geez, I must remember that now, and I could use that in the future. It was such a hard hitting point. And Pat Kenny brushed away the whole thing about direct democracy. He said, I mentioned something about Switzerland, and he said, we're not the Swiss, that'll never work here. And I tried to say, well, we're not the Germans or the English or the French or the Italians either, but we all have representative democracy. Why does that work here and direct democracy wouldn't? You know, we don't have to become the Swiss to have the power of direct democracy, right?
But the fact that it was actually in our original constitution should say something in itself.
Exactly. But he just dismissed it, you see. But I came back with this remark, which was very hard hitting. Told myself I must remember that. When the thing was over, I went back to listen to the podcast. It was edited out. That, and I could not see, even though I was on the program, I couldn't hear, I couldn't detect where and how it was edited out. It was so professionally done. I couldn't get that comment back. And I rang them and said, you've edited the podcast. Oh, we never do that. It goes out as it went out. No, they did it. And they did it on another occasion as well. They edited out content.
Can I ask you, was that a live broadcast or was that a pre-recorded?
At the time, it was live.
Okay, because they have a habit of doing that. They always ask for pre-records because they know they can doctor the actual the interview and then put it out on the show with the parts removed that they don't want in it.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it was live at the time, and it was in the Yacht Club in Dunleary. And but when I, like I said, when I listened back to the podcast, it had been edited out. Now, another example of this now is Martha Andreasen, who was the accountant for the EU. And she was a nobody. She had a Spanish passport, but she was from Argentina. And she was made the general accountant, whatever the term was, for the EU. And I met her when she came to Dublin to give a talk, and I spoke to her. And she was very interested in the idea of direct democracy and all that. But she told me something at the time, which was in her book as well. I bought her book at the time. And she told me that she was, and she said it, I can't remember whether she told me directly or whether she actually said it in her talk, but she was asked to sign off on checks with no accountability as to who they were for or what they were for. And these were large amounts, 300 to 500 million euros for companies that were formed. And these monies had to be paid back within 2 years. And if they weren't paid back within 2 years, the paperwork was shredded and the loans were written off, right? Mm. She said the largest check she was asked to sign off on, which she wouldn't do, and no accountability as to what it was for or who it was for, was 1.4 billion euros.
Wow.
Now, this is where money was going missing in the EU. The EU has not signed off on its accounts in 26 or 7 years or more, maybe 30 years now, because they can't. So much money goes missing. Now, she left, and when I bought the book, she launched it in Ireland because we had the Lisbon Treaty coming up. And she was delighted on the day, because it was the next day that she'd launched the book and been to Cork and launched it down there. And she was full of joy because she said it was sold out. It wasn't sold out. It was bought off the shelf, so nobody could read it. And when I went to look for a copy, I was told I'd have to wait several weeks. The election was over. Wow. Right?
Yeah.
Now, I got a copy of the book and I read it. And that point I just made about the amount of money that she was being asked to sign off on with no accountability as to what it was for, who it was for, was in that book. Now, I gave it to somebody and never got it back. About a year ago, I ordered another copy on Amazon, and I got it that was edited out.
Wow.
Gone. Gone from the update. And you cannot buy that book in Ireland since that election. And you can only buy it through Amazon. And it has been edited.
I was just wondering if you could get the original copy or access to her, the original copy as a PDF, and then get it, you know, print it yourself, or print, you know, for permission from her to get it printed from the original and put it back up for sale.
Well, see, there you are. You're getting into publishing now, and that costs money, and you're getting into marketing and trying to get the thing out there, and that's money and time and all of these things, and you know, getting it printed, all of that. Not an easy thing to do. Look, they control everything. It's just, this is what you're up against, and you will be targeted.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, this is the trouble. They will target you if you are trying to change the narrative. See, this is why I think, you know, I know you teach and you've been involved in transcendental meditation, and so you obviously believe in energy and obviously a bigger picture than what's going on. And this is why I think the changes that are going to be taking place and that are coming down the line. I mean, if you look at the likes of the human frequency, for example, that's manageable, that you can look at and you can meter that. You can see that it's happening. There's energies coming in and it's affecting the planet in a big way. And I believe that because of this control within the structure, the population of the planet, and because of this control and people are stopped doing and making changes, the change has to be taken over our hands, because otherwise, now there's good people that are involved in trying to make a shift and make a change, and that's great. And the momentum is growing and more people are beginning to wake up. But I do believe there's something else in the background also working away and chipping away at that for the change to take place, because the frequencies are going up and they might want to pull them down, but we are going up and they're not going to be coming back down. And I think, and what I've been told by a number of guests that I've interviewed, is that their plans are failing. Every time they do something and come out with something, it fails and people see it. It's getting more obvious that it's a mistake. And even the people who are really complicit with their plans, those people now begin to ask questions. I mean, you're not going to get everybody, obviously. You won't get everybody. But we need to hit critical mass for change to be inevitable. And once we hit critical mass, then change will happen. As to what will happen, you know, hopefully we don't go in the Mad Max scenario. Hopefully we don't get to that stage. I do believe we need to plan for it. We need to plan for something. If that happens, you know, I always say, and the listeners know me by now, it's better to have it and not need it, and need it and not have it. So if you have planned for it and it doesn't happen, happy days. But if you have planned for it and it does happen, then you've planned for it. So that's the way I say to people, get your house in order, do as much as you can, get things organized. But we have about 20 minutes left. Well, about 15 minutes left. And I want to focus on kind of the positives from now and where you see things going. I mean, I mentioned earlier about you thinking about setting up another party. This time, obviously, with your experience and your knowledge of what happened in the past, you'll obviously do it differently. How will you do that, if you want to mention a few ideas? Or if you do, let's just say you decide to do that, what would be your change of plan now based on your experience?
I'd rather not say.
Okay, that's top secret then. Okay, well, let's just say you'll approach things differently based on your experience and what you've learned. But here's the thing, regardless of what you do, even if you do decide to set up another party, how do you stop, and it's very hard, how do you stop infiltrators and controlled opposition? My own personal opinion is, if you have a constitution, a party constitution, and you agree with all, you know, if you decide, look, we're only going to focus on these 2 points and that's it, nothing else. If anybody comes in and starts veering the party or veering people away from them too, then it's going to be quite obvious.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a difficult one. And I don't quite have an answer now. Some of the people I know do have an answer, and I'd rather not talk about it at this point because I don't want to give out information to people who would be out there trying to infiltrate you. So that is a difficult question, and it's something we will have to get around. All right, but that's about all I can say on that.
Okay, I do think that, and obviously the bigger parties like Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil would have a strategy group where you get together and you look again at the psychology and what needs to be done the way forward. And I have asked this question to one or two people that were involved with parties, and they don't seem to have at the time they didn't have a strategy group where they had different skill sets within that group to brainstorm and come up with a plan of moving forward, because everybody can add something in based on their experience, as you know, and either from a psychological, from a marketing, from a PR point of view. And I find that is very, very important, especially the psychological side. I mean, even the UK government have their own group called SAGE, and Ireland would have NEFID and all these people in their group brainstorming, the spin doctors coming together and speaking about the psychology of what they need to do, how to manipulate the media and what to do to control the people. I mean, government parties are no different. Now, obviously, you have to be transparent to a certain extent, but you have to look at what works for the party and how to move it forward. And maybe that's why some parties decide to. I mean, I know Dolores stepped away from the Freedom Party, and maybe the Freedom Party had their list of things that they wanted doing, and maybe Dolores didn't agree with what the list was, and she did decided to move on. I am hoping to have Dolores on the show in the next few weeks. Hopefully, I'll have to give her a ring and sort out a date and time. But I don't know, what is the way forward, Ray, from here? I mean, I know you've been disillusioned with everything that's going on, and I totally agree. I've been doing this for 11 years. On radio and speaking to people all over the world about what's going on. And I don't know what drives me. I really don't know what drives me. I mean, there's been times that I've just thought, you know what, it's time to pack up and finish. I'm just going to get on with my life. And all of a sudden, this burst of energy comes flying in, and then I'm off again. So I don't know what's your driver.
I'm not sure either. You know, I'm in my 70s now, so, you know, things change. I mean, I was 59 when I started thinking about direct democracy and or thereabouts. And you do change as you get older. You know, your hormones change, your experience, I mean, changes. All my family are dead now, except for my brother, who I don't see because he lives up in Donegal. That changes your perspective on a certain amount of things. And, you know, you can only take it one day at a time, basically. And that's all I can say. And especially when you're near the end of your life, and you're, like I said, in your 70s, you have a different outlook. And I've been through a lot. I've seen the level of control. I don't know how you fight that. I actually don't, because they control everything. And people who speak out, as we all know, and you can call it coincidence, vanish or they just disappear. I mean, look at the amount of, for instance, just look at the amount of people like Vincent Brown, George Hook, Waters, Cathy Sinnott, all gone from the media now, all delete it, if you like. The chap from The Independent, what was his name? The writer.
David Williams?
No. He was had up for having said something and they made out, but he's a brilliant writer. But, you know, rubs the government up the wrong way. He's gone. George Hook gave me my launch for DDI on his show, and had Ben Gilroy on. He's gone now. Cathy Sinnott speaking out again, gone. John Waters, gone, because he's a bit religious. Everybody who stands up or speaks out have been deleted and gone. What's his name? Vincent Brown. He supported the concept of direct democracy, and he's gone. You know, it's very hard. You have to be, I don't know. I honestly don't know at this stage how you beat these people, other than just still trying to give out the information and hope that time will prove you right and you will come to the top. You know, the cream will rise to the top when the chaos is presents itself, you know.
Well, I think the idea of a party, I mean, as an individual, I think you're more vulnerable. But as a party, I think has more strength in the party. But again, you're only as strong as your weakest link. And I think, you know, for the core group in the party, you need to really make sure who you bring into that group. I mean, I have a PIF team. And a group of people that I meet up with every Wednesday, and we talk about donations that the radio station, who we donate to. And they are great people on the same wavelength, on the same frequency. Each of them, we're all the same, and we all think the same. Well, when I say think the same, everybody has their own opinion on things, but we're all on the same wavelength. We're all service to others. We're all high energy people. And we all have our own issues in our life and stuff like that. But what we want to do, our goal is to try and help people and to and do what we can. And when you have people vibrating on the same frequency as you with the right attitude and the right mindset, then if you have that core group within the actual party and they have morals, they have integrity, they don't have an ego. I think understanding the psychology of ego.
How do you determine that? I mean, I thought the people that were made themselves the executives and all of that, and we voted for them as executives because they looked like they were saying all the right things and doing it, you know, whatever needed, and they tried to take it over, and that happened on several occasions, and it has ultimately happened again. You know, it's been taken over, and they got rid of me. And how do you know what these people are, whether they're genuine, whether it's ego that drives them, whether they're disguising their socialist or whatever communist views, you know? How do you know?
Well, it's because, I'll tell you how you know. It's like the magic trick. When you know how the magic trick, when you know the certain traits that people show, psychologically, you know, I know I keep going back to psychology and energy, but psychology is human behavior. And even when myself and Steve stopped pushing information to people and we start speaking to people about the psychology of the whole waking up process, people began to understand it and get it. Because we did a seminar, we spoke at the Basis Conference and we spoke at the Open Mind Conference about the psychology of opening up and waking up to what's going on. We didn't talk about whether the moon was made of cheese or whatever, or fluoride in the water. We spoke about how the psychology of the mind and people think and people work. And what you have to do, I think, when you're bringing people in, is you need to approach it in that way. And there's ways and means of doing that.
The thing is that, you know, running a radio station or whatever is a completely different thing to running a political party. There is no power agenda so much in what you're doing. In a political party, there is an element of a sense of power in certain people's minds, you know, a sense of authority, all of these things, which appeals to a particular type of person. Mm. Now, that's the difference. And people are very good at deception. And, you know, that's why we're in the situation we are today, because the people that are supposed to be representing us have deceived us. Well, they are not representing us. The impression that they're representing us. And that happens when you have an organization where there is the possibility of power and influence. That's the difference between that and running a radio station, which you don't have power. You're just giving out information.
Well, as I say, I worked in the corporate world and I worked for multinationals and I hired and fired staff. So there's, from a management point of view, there's ways and means of doing it. I know we don't have time. We've only a few minutes left. But there's ways and means of doing it, Ray. As I say, we don't have time to talk about it. But if you want to, if you want to talk off air, I'm more than happy to talk to you about it. I've been told that if I don't answer this question, I'm in trouble by one of the listeners on Bluebell. He had it right the first time. That's why they took it over and destroyed it. Well, obviously, that's Bluebell's question there. How do you feel about that?
About what now? Sorry.
Bluebell said, the listener on the chat room, she said that Ray had it right the first time. That's why they took it over and destroyed it.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that's it. They don't want you to succeed. You know, there's, what can I say? She's right. I mean, what can I say?
Okay.
Now,
you quickly want to give a mention to this Facebook scam.
Yeah. There seems to be a spate of cloning of people's Facebook pages and their web pages as well, if they have a website, whereby people are trying to get people to invest in things or claim prizes and all this kind of thing, coming from ordinary people like myself, but a cloned version of that. And I've had two attempts at that recently. One was from a chap who runs a web site called the Dollar Vigilante, and he talks a lot about cryptocurrency. I got a message supposedly from him, and his photograph and the web pages, everything was perfect. And I thought, why the hell is he contacting me? And very polite, and I see you're interested in crypto, and can I help you? And I said, yeah, but can I just ring you? This was on Messenger, and I was going to ring him on Messenger. No, I'm too busy for that. And, you know, I don't have time to be talking. But he had time to message me, right, and talk on Messenger. So I thought that was a bit odd. But anyway, he eventually let me go. I rang him and he didn't answer. So the next day I got another message. Hi, how are you? And I said, yeah, I'm grand. What's up? And yeah, you're still interested in crypto? Yeah, well, yeah. And I said, I have friends who are multimillionaires who want to buy crypto, right? Mm-hmm. And they're asking me about it and blah, blah. Next thing, I get a call. Okay. Now, the chap who runs the Dollar Vigilante is a Canadian, right?
I know, I've interviewed him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you know who he is.
Yeah.
So next thing, this guy comes on the phone and says he's him. He has a thick Eastern European accent. And I said, I thought Jeff was Canadian. Oh, yeah, I'm from, and he mentions the town that Jeff is from in Canada. And I said, how come you've got an Eastern European accent? You know, he has a... That's why I wanted to talk to him, basically, to make sure it was him. Mm. And, no, and then there was a kerfuffle, and then I was cut off. Mm. So next thing, I was sent a video of Jeff, and this was, however they manipulate these things now, saying, and looking straight, like it looks like he's looking at me, and a short clip going, F off, basically. Right.
Yeah.
And well done, I have to say. But this is what you're up against. And it was only because I mentioned I had friends who were multimillionaires and wanted to invest that I got the call. He thought somehow he could fool me. I don't know how he thought that. But, you know, given the Eastern European accent, the guy's a Canadian. But then I had somebody contacted me yesterday while I'm walking my dog. And it was a woman who is a bit of a nationalist, and she has an Irish flag on her thing. And, you know, and I befriended her, and she put up a couple of videos I liked, and that was fine. And it was, by the way, I saw your name on a website today. She said, I've just won a thing, 48,000 euros on a site, a postcode site, right? They pick your postcode, and I saw your name. And she said, did you collect your money? And I went, no, I didn't. And I don't even know about it, and blah, blah, blah. So I kept getting these things, contact this chap on Facebook and ask him, what's the story, and give him your details. So I looked at the webpage, and a very respectable looking middle-aged man. And so I didn't bother. But anyway, next thing I get more messages while I'm walking my dog. Have you contacted him yet? And all this. I said, no, I'm walking my dog, blah, blah, blah. So eventually I rang the number, cut a long story short, and a guy with a very heavy, I don't know if it was Nigerian or Eastern European, it was a very foreign accent, onto the phone with very little English. And I went, forget it.
Yeah. Now, there's a lot of scams. I'll have to finish up now, but there's a lot of scams out there, folks. And there is a website out there, a YouTube channel out there of scammers, all the things that the scammers do. And it's unbelievable the level they go to for scamming. So just be aware that they are cloning Facebook pages. And there's also one going around. I know the Mead police are saying that you're getting phone calls from the revenue or from social services saying that, you know, there's a problem with your payment, and, you know, if you don't give us your details, you're going to be going to jail, and, you know, a warrant will be out for your arrest. It's just amazing the scams they try and pull that's out there. But Ray, thanks a lot for coming on the show. A big thank you for all the information that you shared there. Good luck in everything that you have to do. If you ever want to get together for a coffee and a chat, I'd be more than happy to share my thoughts with you.
I'd like to do that. Yeah,
you know, and because there's more than one way to skin a cat, you know, and as you know, and so if there's any contact details that you want to give out there, that for people, if you want to email you or contact you and say hello or whatever.
Well, not really. There's just like I said, I'm married to the dog. I spend hours a day having to walk her. She's a big dog, built for walking, and it's very hard to be taking phone calls, you know, so I don't tend to give my phone out. But my Facebook page is there, and I put a warning up about this scam thing, and I think somebody has cloned my site. So if they get a message from me saying they've won money or whatever, don't bother, you know.
No worries.
My Facebook page, and there's a black and white photograph of me, a three-quarter length photograph, and there are a few other Raymond Whiteheads, including a relative of mine in England who's Raymond Whitehead. So, but my Facebook page is a black and white photo of me, and they get me on that if they want.
Okay, no problem at all. Ray, just stay there, and thanks a lot for coming on. We're just going to go off to a musical break, and we'll be back after this.
You're listening to Alan James on Circle of White Light Radio and People's Internet Radio.
Okay, folks, that was Raymond Whitehead, and great information from Raymond all about the political side and other things that we threw out there regarding COVID and everything else. And I just said that if Raymond wants to hook up and have a chat about getting together and just talking about things in general, then we'd be happy to do that. He's not a million miles away. He's down in Dublin. So we can sort something out. But it was interesting information all the same. It's just, again, the usual thing where people are trying to make a difference, and for whatever reason, it gets scuppered in some way, or and people just get disillusioned, and they think, why am I going to waste my time because this is what's going on? That's why I think there's higher forces at play for this change to take place. And I know that sounds really weird, but maybe it has to be taken out of the hands of the people, because every time somebody tries to make a difference or make a change, it does get affected that people get attacked or taken out or whatever. So maybe it needs to be with higher energies, so to speak. So we'll see what happens anyway. I mean, there are positives to be taken out of what's going on, because there's an awful lot of people waking up to what's going on because of it. And that's the whole idea. We needed a global crisis to affect people so they wake up to what's going on, and this is it. So it's not fun, and people are struggling, I know. But I do, it's something I said on the show, that a lot of people who are outside the matrix, not everybody, but a lot of people I've spoken to are not struggling as bad as the people inside the Matrix who are in fear because of the COVID. And I was doing my shopping there last week and I was speaking to the cashier and she said, oh, well, yeah, I got COVID. And I said, oh, well, is it not just the flu rebranded? Oh, no, no, this is really different. And they had to give me these drugs and everything else. And I thought, well, maybe, well, you know, maybe it's just a different strain or virus of the flu. It's a flu virus. So maybe it's a different virus and it's more severe. But it's still a virus and it's still the flu virus. And as Ray said, within 3 hours of having that, his taste buds gone, it came back. His body dealt with it. So, I don't know, answers on the postcard. But a lot more people are, you know, going in for the jab. And, oh, God, what way is it going to be down the road? Folks, you know, the global restoration plan is something that has to happen. I do think we need something in place. Should the system go down and people start dying off and there's not enough people there to man the boats, so to speak, and run the services that's required. So, you know, I just hope it doesn't get to that stage, but you never know. Now, during the week, funny enough, very quickly, you probably heard that Melinda and Bill Gates were divorcing after 27 years. Now, there's also the other side of the coin of people thinking that's all just for the media because maybe old Bill is transferring a little bit of wealth over to his wife so he's not being caught by taxes or he's not being caught by things or he's up to something else. It's a common ploy by people like that to come up with an excuse saying I'm getting divorced, but basically they'll offload a lot of their stock and their businesses to the wife. So they're not liable because... So a comment I made during the week, which seemed to rattle one person's cage, and it was only a small comment I made based on the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, is that the rich don't want to own everything because you're liable when you owned it, but the poor want to own everything. So when the bailiffs come knocking on your door, they want to take stuff that belongs to you. But if that was a rich person, the rich person would say, well, all that stuff is in a trust. That doesn't belong to me. I don't own that. That's not mine, so you can't take it. And that's what, and the rich people teach their kids how to put things in trust and corporations, so it's out of reach of the likes of bailiffs and stuff like that. So if you don't own anything, they can't take anything. So the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, if you haven't read it, is a good book regarding the psychology of money and how the rich think. I found it quite interesting anyway. And there's a lot more to that subject matter, by the way. I don't have time to talk about it obviously on the show, but there's a lot more to it, but I'm just touching base on it just to let you know. Right, okay. The other thing I'm reading at the moment, I've got the book Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, and one of the chapters I finished was a victim mentality and blaming everyone else for their situation in life. So it's very interesting, the victim mentality, you know, it's everybody else's fault, not mine. And people need to accept that sometimes it is your fault, you know, and accept that it's your fault. Take responsibility for your life. Stop blaming everybody else, saying it's all them out there that's causing the problem in my life. No, you have to take responsibility for your life because it's easier to do that than do something about it. So I just find that that chapter was very important. And the other thing, give a quick mention too. Apparently Aldi or Lidl, one of them, are apparently rolling out PCR tests that you can buy and test yourself. So is this, you know, trying to cat amongst the pigeons? So then, basically, if you can test yourself and it tells you whether you're positive or negative, that's really going to upset the apple cart with Neffid and the HSA and everything else, because it was them giving out the PCR tests and they were doing the tests and coming back and saying whether they were positive or negative. But if you can do your own test and it tells you, then it's really going to show up what's going on. If they're lying, which we know they are lying about the PCR test, if they're lying, which they are, it's really going to show it up now. And I don't think they're happy with the fact that Aldi or Lidl are doing that. So watch out for them self-tests in Aldi and Lidl. And then, but make sure if you read the instructions that wherever the test is, if it's a PCR test, what level it tests at. Remember, the magnification should only be 25, 30, not 40, 45, which is what Irish government are doing. And next week on the show, very quickly, we have Liam and Gavin from the Arenda Project. You know Liam from Scotland? Liam's going to be coming on the show, and Gavin, he is the quantum surgeon. They're both going to be coming on the show. We're going to have a chat about everything that's going on, the bigger picture. So that's going to be very interesting. I was talking to Liam only a couple of weeks ago, and it'd be good to catch up on everything that's going on. And positive good news, because there's a lot of stuff going on. And Lynn as well, her project on what Lynn is doing there with the Love Group, I'm sure it's going to be interesting to find out more. Anyway, for myself, I think coming up on PIR is Barry Prince, The Big Picture. Happy Mother's Day to some countries have Mother's Day this week. So happy Mother's Day to them. I'm sure Mother's Day for us over here in Ireland is going to be coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And so happy Mother's Day to you, and take care, everyone. Have a great week. If you have any news, let me know. Thanks, everyone, for the links. I do see them. I do read them. Some I use, some I don't, but it's good information anyway. So thanks again. I hope you enjoyed the show. Sorry about the glitch at the start of the show with the technical issues, but there you go. That's the problem with live radio. That's what happens. But for myself, have a good week. Take care and bye bye.
You have been listening to Circle of White Light Radio on CircleofWhiteLight.com, focusing on solutions and thinking different.